At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Who will be selected number one? Which teams will trade up and down? And who will be crowned Mr. Irrelevant? It's time for the 2024 NFL Draft. And iHeart is your home for the NFL Podcast Network. Get all the insights, mock drafts, and trade rumors with podcasts like Around the NFL and Move the Sticks. Open the free iHeart app and search NFL Draft for dozens of podcasts, playlists, and live stations to get you ready for the weekend's big event.
Let's go!
Listen to NFL podcasts on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search NFL to start listening.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, what up? Welcome in. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball. You can always tweet me at Gottlieb Show. Hit me up on the Doug Gottlieb Show fan page or at Gottlieb Show on Instagram as well. You have an all-ball guest that you think would be good, feel free. Somebody you want to hear from? Topic you want tackled? Knock yourself out. Today's guest is Angela Weathers. Angela was the first head coach of a men's professional basketball team ever. We'll talk about that. But we'll also talk about her journey to this place as a star basketball player in his own right. It is fascinating. Today's really more about her journey. Before we get to that, I do want to ask this question. You know, when we were kids, in football, your best player or your star player was a running back. In basketball, your go-to guy was your center. Now, there were exceptions, right? Magic and Bird were the exceptions. They're both big, 6'9 and 6'10, but they weren't centers. They didn't play inside. Both, though, had tremendous big men, you know? Robert Parrish may have been a little mechanical, but the Chief blocked shots, dunked, made shots, and was generally an incredibly respected member of Larry Bird's Celtics championship crew. Meanwhile, Magic Johnson had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who was a six-time MVP and a six-time NBA champion, and the league's all-time leading scorer until LeBron ultimately passes him. So you had great big guys. My question is, what about 2022? Jokic is out of the playoffs. We've seen a lot of talk about Rudy Gobert maybe being moved or his limitations. And part of it is, like, look, he struggles with rotations defensively, and then he doesn't give you a ton offensively either. But I watched Joel Embiid, and I know that Jokic played well, and he's out of the playoffs. And I understand some of it is the teams that you're playing against, but some of it is just how basketball has changed. And I ask you, and I think I know the answer, can you win an NBA championship with a big guy as your best player? And I don't think the answer is yes. You can. I think you can win an NBA championship with Joel Embiid. You can win it with Jokic. But there are going to be times in which you're not going to play them because of the matchups. Because they're stretched away from the hoop so greatly. And this is like, look, in football, you still run the ball. You still use your running backs. We just use, you know, two or three running backs by committee because they all get banged up. And they haven't really, it's super physical. And they haven't changed those rules. The same is true for big guys. You know, the game is incredibly physical, and it's really hard to score down there. So I do wonder if we're watching Joel Embiid, and I was watching in Game 5 and his struggles to score down low, and you start to realize that maybe you can't win an NBA championship with your best player being a big. All right, let's get to our talk with first part one with Angela Weathers.
Well, look, obviously, you know, when I intro you, we go through your list of amazing accomplishments, but everybody started somewhere. Okay. You started playing basketball where?
So I started playing in college at Ole Miss, and then
No, you didn't just start playing there.
Oh, you mean as far as like my journey?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, like most kids, I started in third grade playing with guys. I grew up in an Army base, and by eighth grade, I was playing with grown men, and that led to an opportunity for me to be discovered by the forefather of AAU and Charlie Domino in Metairie, Louisiana. And from there, I only played one summer.
Wait, you're like, Angela, God bless you. You're like skipping all these steps. Okay, wait. So third grade was what Army base?
So my mom, we grew up in Seattle. So I just grew up playing in Seattle, and then she married someone that was in the Army. And when she married the gentleman in the Army, we ended up leaving Seattle and going to Louisiana.
You go from Seattle, which is beautiful, cool, moist, rainy, right? But also, you know, like West Coast, you go to the deep South. Also, not only you're in deep South, but you're also, there's a completely different culture with an Army base. What was that like for you?
Because we were, my mom was a single mother, from going no structure to structure, it was a culture shock, basically. You have, you know, obviously the culture in Louisiana and the South, you know, coming from Seattle and into the Bible Belt was just complete culture shock on 10 different levels. So, the basketball in the South, that's all you do. You know, that was just basically an everyday thing. Every kid lives and breathes basketball. So,
yeah, except now was it for a young girl and then becoming a woman in terms of playing basketball? What was that like during your era?
Well, during my era, there weren't a lot of, even though girls played, there weren't a lot of girls who took it very seriously.
They weren't hoopers. You were a hooper.
Exactly. Hooper doopers. So in my era, case in point, I grew up watching men's college basketball. I didn't even watch women's college basketball. So I grew up watching Stacey Augmon and, you know, guys at UNLV and Toby Bailey at UCLA. So I, you know, for me, I was different. You know, it was something that I thought that you just woke up and did every single day. And so when I got to the AAU circuit, which was the only type of basketball being played outside of school basketball, you know, to me, it was like, oh, okay, there's more people that play this game. And it, quite frankly, for me, it didn't matter who else played the game because I was playing with grown men. So I had a different mentality on top of that. So when I stepped into that realm, for me, my confidence level was just different. It was different for a girl. It was, you know, like the love of basketball. I'm better than you, you know, I'm better than everyone. So I just had a different chip on my shoulder. And part of that also was as a result of the trauma and the, you know, dysfunction going on in my home. So I just,
it was your outlet.
It was my outlet. It was my sanctuary. The game, the gym became my sanctuary. And, you know, it wasn't like now where girls have trainers and, you know, all this good stuff. I actually picked up the game by watching some guys play and left their ball behind at the rec center. And I would, every time, you know, they would leave, I would go and, you know, kind of just work on my game and shoot and whatever have you. And luckily, you know, whatever I saw as far as, you know, shot mechanics was good because that became a strong suit of my game.
It's funny. Imagine the people you could have copied and mimicked. Like, where'd you learn to shoot? Like, I don't know, I just copied some guys. You spoke of the trauma at home. How bad was it?
So it, you know, it definitely was, Wow. So I grew up in Seattle before moving to Louisiana at a time where, you know, gangbanging, Crips and Bloods was like a thing. And my siblings, my two older siblings were into it. And so mom was, you know, working three jobs. So it was very, very difficult. There was always the noise and the sound of just, you know, craziness in my house. So for me, being the middle of five children at home, I just took to a different, I don't know, just a different way I internalized. And so I kept a lot to myself. I really wasn't like my two older siblings. I really wasn't like the two younger. And I just, you know, I took to sports, and that became, you know, my way of escape. It was what I thought about all the time. It was, I didn't want to play with dolls or Barbies. It just became a part of every fiber of my being naturally and organically. And I think that's probably why I became such a natural talent in the game.
So were you in Louisiana your entire, or I mean, usually army bases, you move around, don't you?
No, yeah. So astonishingly, mom married into, like I said, someone in the military, and he had a medical dispatch. And they used to joke around, you know, if you got stationed at Fort Polk or Fort Puke, you would be stuck there. And sure enough, he had a medical dispatch. He was diagnosed with sleep apnea. So we didn't move around, you know, so we were stuck in then what became moving off of the Army base to Leesville, Louisiana. And people about our mascot, where the mascot is a Wampus cat. So yeah.
What is a Wampus cat?
I don't know to this day. Some type of cat. So you know, but the amazing thing was, you know, in hindsight, when I look back at it, I was just very fortunate to grow up with top tier athletes. I went to school with Cecil Collins, that went on to the NFL, the Mawa brothers that went to the NFL, and Demai Mallett, who was, you know, a NBA prospect, and Mr. Germany. So there was a certain sense of focus there. But when it also came to kids that were from the city, because I came off of the Army base, I wasn't liked a whole lot by my teammates or anyone for that matter. So I was always a loner.
A Wampus cat is a cat-like creature in American folklore.
Yeah.
That varies in appearance, but it's a real thing. And yeah, the Wampus cat.
Huh. Yeah.
Who knew? You're in high school.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, when did the thought, as you said, you grew up watching men's college basketball. Sure. When did it become real that you could play college basketball in your own right?
You know, that's a great question. So it was like, it wasn't really ever a thought, but until I went to play this thing called AAU, and I was like, okay, this is a part of the process. And as Domino explained that to me, and I didn't want to do it because I was an introvert. So I decided that I would just, you know, I heard this was a part of the process, but how about I just get it done in school basketball? So that's what I did. And because of that, that put a little more fuel under my tail. And at that national tournament, I tell people this story. I remember I was on a team with three strings of all states players and all district players in the state of Louisiana. Anybody that could hoop was on this team. Right. And so, you know, a blow to my ego, I was on the third string. And I'll never forget it. We went in number 5 in the nation. We ended up coming out number 14, but Domino called my name. We were playing a game, and I just remember going to, he said, Davidson. And so I jumped up and I go to the scorer's table, and I just look up in the stands and I see clipboards and logos. And I can't even tell you, when I went in that game, within an 8-minute span, I just obviously did what I do, a little bit of everything. And it was a blur after that. But I mean, I probably played all of 10 minutes in the national tournament. And by the time I got home, I remember late summer checking my mailbox, and I can't remember the first piece of mail, which college, you know, as far as other than what I was getting from McNeese State University, a couple local universities from going to camp, what that letter was. But I knew, you know, I just knew that I was going to play college basketball. And then day after day, it began to flood. The mailbox began to flood.
You know, what was fascinating is you were one of the first, and there was always, you know, you go back to Penny Toller, yep, and and Pam McGee and Cheryl Miller. There are women that play basketball and there are women that are basketball players, and it's the movement. Mm-hmm. It was the naturalness of your movement where, like, if I didn't know you were a woman, I would say like, well, okay, that's a basketball player. Was it ever a thing within a women's locker room where like some girls play like girls? It's a different way of like shooting them a shot, putting the ball, and some are like hoopers.
Yeah.
And I feel like you were right. Was it noticeable to women as it is to men?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was a shot blocker. You couldn't shoot the ball anywhere near me. Right. I was a above the rim rebounder. I could dunk in 10th grade. I was a high flyer. My first step was unbelievable. It was like, you know, she's amazing. All you can do is try to contain her.
So, well, where were your first dunk in 10th grade? Where was it?
So I was actually in California. I was playing in the Sano Classic Games, and my coach, she played at UNLV. And so she was mentoring me, and I was playing in, you know, like I said, different camps and things like that. And it was so funny. One of the people, he actually left the gym, and I was a perfectionist. So I didn't ever want to fail in front of anyone. And so Tony Bland was actually in the gym. We were friends. And he left out and another young lady that we were with. And I just grabbed the basketball and I was like, I'm going to do this. And when they went to get water, when they came back in, I was like, I just dunked it. Yo, I just dunked it. They're like, you're lying. I was like, yes, I did. So what I did do was I went and, you know, grabbed the rim or whatever. Like, she's not lying. She's not lying, dude. She literally.
Wait, so you couldn't do it again, though? You only did it once?
I did because I was that much of a perfectionist that I didn't want to fail.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Who will be selected number one? Which teams will trade up and down? And who will be crowned Mr. Irrelevant? It's time for the 2024 NFL Draft. And iHeart is your home for the NFL Podcast Network. Get all the insights, mock drafts, and trade rumors with podcasts like Around the NFL and Move the Sticks. Open the free iHeart app and search NFL Draft for dozens of podcasts, playlists, and live stations to get you ready for the weekend's big event.
Let's go!
Listen to NFL podcasts on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search NFL to start listening.
Hey, it's Andy, Mike, and Jason of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast here, and we're inviting you to join us live on NFL Plus following the first round of the NFL Draft. Look, fantasy football, let's be honest, gentlemen, it kind of rules the world.
That's right, and we will be live with in-the-moment fantasy football reactions to all the first-round selections and all the craziest surprises. We never can predict what's going to happen on that first day of the NFL Draft.
Lots of elite talent at the skill positions that will have a big impact on fantasy football this year. Are we going to get three wide receivers in the top 10? Are we going to break the record for the most wide receivers in the first round? Is there going to be a running back? I don't know.
And there's a lot of teams like the Chiefs, the Bills. We're really excited about their quarterback. Do they add a wide receiver? What are some of those best landing spots?
The Fantasy Footballers Draft Special will air exclusively on NFL Plus on Thursday, April 25th, following the conclusion of the first round of the draft. Go to plus.nfl.com to sign up today. Terms and conditions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Take me through your college decision.
Sure. So because, like I said, I was going to, my mom put me in position to go to be recruited early. So I was exposed in seventh grade to local colleges, you know, Northwestern State, Magny State University, Division I schools in Louisiana. And so those were where I got my first letters. And one of the coaches actually that was at Magny State University, he was a smart man. He, you know, gained, you know, a good rapport with me and a close relationship to where, you know, he followed me throughout as I got into high school. So when I got into high school, and like I said, the recruitment was already picking up from having played AU. You know, I had, by the time I was going into 11th grade, I was a WBCA and a Nike All-American candidate and an invite to everything you could think of and an ESPN 100. So all of the schools that were recruiting me were top, you know, a top 25 schools in the country. So of the, you know, what I narrowed down from 100 to, you know, 50 to 25 ended up being top 25 schools. But there again, because I did not research or watch the women's game, I couldn't have told you like who was who amongst who in the SEC to the Conference USA and ACC that were recruiting me. I mean, I knew the names of the schools, but I had no idea what to, you know, base my decision on otherwise than I want to play in the, I want to play professional basketball because WNBA wasn't around and I want to be on TV. I want to play professional basketball. And that's that.
Okay. So how'd you make your decision?
So literally what I did was I did ask schools a series of questions. My intention was to take all five visits, but I did not. I only took a few of them. And because of the relationship with the coach that was at Magny State University, he ended up being named the head assistant at Ole Miss. So when he got named the head assistant at Ole Miss, it was like a no-brainer. Like I trusted him. I was a homebody. He knew I was a small town kid. And so even though I went on a few visits, it was pretty much a done deal. I verbally committed the first official visit I had at Ole Miss, like, and they were number one. And so, they took me back and, you know, had that conversation without my mom. And when I came out, she said, well, how'd it go? I said, well, it was good, you know. And then she learns later, she's like, what? She was like, you verbally committed. You didn't tell me that. I was like, well, I didn't know what that was. I guess that's what I did. So, that's how that went.
What was Ole Miss like?
You know, I went to Ole Miss at a time where there was some just funny things happening in the world. The Confederate flag was a huge issue, was an ongoing thing. And so there were not a whole lot of, Black students, let alone that, you know, at the university, most of them were Black student athletes. And so the culture was very small and it looked like, you know, where I had come from, you know, it was very Black and white. And so I felt comfortable. Oxford is a very small town. There's not a whole lot to get yourself into. You got to be like looking for, you know, for trouble. And to me, it was, you know, the amenities, the buildings, everything was just, the newer parts that mattered, you know, where we did strength and conditioning were, you know, they were amazing. So to me, it was an opportunity to, experience the best of the best. Now, as far as my onboarding, I was recruited by Ron Aldi and John Ishii, but this was a time when Van Chancellor he did not recruit my class. He was leaving to go to the WNBA. So a lot of the athletes that came in my class, they were inherited. And I will just say it wasn't what I expected. It was like, wait a minute, you know, what is going on here? And so it was a bit of a transition. It was not necessarily what I had hoped for. And it did play out as such that way. You know, I had a lot of bumps and bruises on my end, as well as with the coaching staff. And it just, you know, I will say, you know, I believe I came in that sense of that era of entitlement. And I was like, wait a minute, I'm an ESPN 100. I'm not sitting on the bench. I earned a scholarship to play here. I'm out of here. So that is how that went. So after year one, I was ready to transfer. And, you know, so I clearly had still other top 25 schools recruiting me. And I came into Ole Miss where there was a girl that was really, really good who was transferring out, and they would not release her. So I knew I didn't have a chance to be released to another powerhouse. So I came to back home to Northwestern State University.
So you come home to Northwestern State.
Yeah.
So now, and look, this is before Ole Miss, before the new building where they had the beautiful arena.
Right.
But like there's a massive drop off in facilities.
Oh my gosh.
Right. You go from the SEC to Northwestern State.
We were flying everywhere. Okay. It was like, you know, you go from a team, you know, team plane to private plane to long bus rides on a charter. And, you know, just everything's different, you know, from strength and conditioning to level of play and teammates, level of play and opponents. Like you said, you know, the amenities and everything. And not that there weren't very hardworking people at Northwestern State University. It's just, I mean, everything is different.
It's just a different level.
You share academic advisors, everything is shared. And so I was, you know, that was humbling. It was very humbling. Even the monies and the allowances and, you know, different things that you get, you know, at that P5 level, it was a pill to swallow.
Okay. But the basketball, you were quickly the best player, right? Like it.
Oh, absolutely.
But you had to sit a year.
I had to sit out. So I spent that year sitting out, getting quicker, faster, stronger. One of the things going into the SEC, I will say, was I was a sopping wet 115 pounds, okay, at 6 foot. And so coming into Northwestern State, I spent that time eating the weights and protein and, you know, back when creatine was the thing. And sure. Literally, that's what I did. And I spent countless hours watching film on, you know, what the conference was like and things like that. And very quickly, as I was eligible, I jumped out averaging probably 16 points more than ever at the conference, which was what I was supposed to do.
Right. What was that like to be successful in an area that you had grown up? Like, it's one thing at Ole Miss, and again, women's basketball different than men's, like, right. If you go away and you play at a big time program, everybody at home sees it. They see it less often, especially back then. Now you're back home. What was that like to really truly make it, to show that all that promise that you had as a high school talent is playing out in college?
Well, it definitely felt good. And then there were days that, you know, just like my life, like there were days it was very difficult because my teammates were like, who does she think she is?
Oh, the jealousy.
Yeah. So I dealt with that and I maintained my focus. And then, you know, and then there was, you know, from the crowd, like we have a great alumni, everyone, the people are, you know, they're, most of them are older, very, very, you know, involved and engaged in everything community. So it was also exhausting, you know? So everybody alumni, it was, you know, lots of autograph signing, lots of just long conversations after games with people that were just, you know, amazing fans and sweet. And then actually it also began to ring a bell across the nation. So I received fan mail from the East Coast and different places, you know, so it felt good. It felt good.
What was it like? You're a little bit younger than me, but similar era.
Yeah.
And I'm interested in what it was like from this perspective. You know, guys basketball, NBA and maybe even slight to a lesser extent overseas ball.
Yeah.
It's a little bit poison only in that the only way you're going to win, as you know, you've won a lot, is if everybody's pulling in the same direction, if everybody's goal is the same. Right. There's no agendas.
Yeah.
And the problem with men's basketball is every one of those dudes thinks that they're going to go to the NBA. Right. And most of them are not. And then they're like, well, if not, I'll go play overseas. And that's incredibly difficult.
Right.
Women's basketball up until the last, you know, 10 years hasn't had that issue. So obviously there was basketball out there to be played, but when you're playing and you're starring at Northwestern State, is it even a thought in your mind about making money, playing overseas, playing professional basketball beyond college?
Oh, absolutely. That was the plan since eighth grade. I mean, if you asked me, you know, my name, it was, I'm Angela Davidson, and I'm going to be a professional basketball player when I grow up. So that was always the plan. I will say the transfer, it really was a blow to my moral compass in believing that I would get there. But it was still like, no doubt in my mind that I was going to get there somehow. And so, so with that, I will say for me, my true north and my faith walk is what literally kept me on focus to do that. Despite playing with teammates that did not have that dream, I literally had maybe one or two teammates that wanted to play professional basketball. And for me, it was like, you know, just sticking to the regimen, sticking to what got me to where I was and staying focused on that. And yeah, so definitely was always, you know, a dream.
You finish up at Northwestern State, then what?
Yep. Yeah, so the reality of playing professionally, coach called me into the locker room and to his office and said, you know, hey, I know you want to play professional basketball. You know, here's a contact. So one of the coaches in the conference had given me a WNBA, you know, FIBA certified agent's contact information that was interested in signing. He says, well, you give him a call. It, you know, coach was at that level. Some people, you know, they don't care whether you play or not professionally. And so graciously, you know, the gentleman signed me. And it just so happened he had quite a few WNBA players and was taking on international clients. And for the reason that I was I was number eight senior in the nation and on the senior watch list, which I'm assuming is why he took me on. And the Sparks were the only team to ask for my film, and they were number one at the time. So I knew that this was going to be a reality, and it was just a matter of they were in the salary dispute, and it was just a far chance that I would, you know, be invited. And so what I did was I swallowed the pill and said, okay, well, let's look if you can just get me, you know, obviously into FIBA and where I need to play against these same women, I'll make it happen. And so that's what we did. And so
did you go first?
So I went to, I was the first woman to play in Macedonia, first Black woman to play in Macedonia. So they had just entered into FIBA. And the caveat to that obviously was new team to FIBA. And, you know, I only went to Europe just contingent upon going to the WNBA and getting back. So played in a Troca league as well. Averaged a double-double in the Troca league, led in every statistical category in the first round of FIBA. We got knocked out and I'm like, deuces, I'm going home. And
what was it? What was Macedonia like?
You know, it was very peaceful. It is a very poor country. It's small, but I played for one of the wealthiest gentlemen that owns a, you know, textile company there. So it was real laid back, you know, very, very quiet, serene. I was by the Black Sea. And so I just took a lot of time to just eat.
What language? What language they speak?
Is Cyrillica. It is what it's called.
So did you pick it up?
I mean, you know, where's my money? Good day. Dope that I did.
Everybody knows where's my money. That is international. That is, where is my money? No money, no practice. Sorry.
So, yeah, that was, you know, literally. That was the case. They're very kind people. They embraced me. I became a celebrity. My coach, he also coached some of the local youth. And so I would volunteer my time. And so I received a letter from them to present, you know, to wherever I was going, that it was an honor and a privilege for them to have me. And I actually am doing a grant right now for Macedonia. So this is crazy how we come full circle. So
is that the only foreign country you played in?
Yeah. So, yeah. And literally toured Greece, Bulgaria, you know, so it's a very large.
Right. But you didn't, like, once you went, we got to the WNBA, you weren't bouncing back because most, a lot of women would bounce back and play in the Russias and whatever, make a bunch of money.
I knew I was a WNBA player. I went, came back, and then I played in the NWBL. And so the NWBL was a fast growing, what would be equivalent to the G League. I played Lieberman Klein and Candy Harvey and Deion Sanders for show. And so I did that for 2 years in hopes to get back in and on American soil instead of going back overseas. So I opted out of that.
What was it like to make it to the WNBA?
So actually, I was a free agent, so I didn't get in, which was fine. I did get to play in the NWBL with Cheryl Ford, Cheryl Swoops. We had the most WNBA players on my team than any other team.
So you know what that was? That league was like the USBL. I played in the USBL similarly.
Exactly.
Where the USBL, like, you know, I played with Willie Burton.
Yep.
Who was the ninth pick in the draft. You play with guys that are pros that are trying to get back in the league.
Exactly. So
and their sneakers squeak a little different, but it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's definitely different than playing in FIBA. It's different than playing in college basketball. When you're playing WNBA or NBA rules with WNBA or NBA players, it's like a different sport.
So I tell people that was my WNBA. The game was good to me. I earned the respect of the greatest players in the game. And that's exactly what that was. I know a couple guys, John Cofino and, Holbright. He actually became my son's college coach at Kilgore later. So knew a couple of those USBL guys. Mark Aguirre was there then.
Who was?
Mark Aguirre.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
So when did coaching become a possibility? Like through all this stuff, like when did coaching become something that intrigued you?
Well, after I was able to just swallow the reality, it took me probably 2 years to realize, like, okay, I'm not okay that it's not happening. I didn't play because I know that the game was good to me. And so, okay, what do I do next? And sure enough, I became a skills coach first, a trainer. And sure. So coach was not a word that I wanted any kid to call me. Okay. This is Miss Angela. Don't call me coach. Okay. And with that, I started training youth in Collin County, and it just so happened to be they ended up being very, very talented young group of young ladies. And before you knew it, their parents were like, hey, you got to coach our kids. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. I'm not a coach. And so I accepted the challenge in about year two after Chris Bosch's uncle had given me a gym for free. And so with that, I ended up going in and finishing very high, which doesn't happen in AAU, as a top 20 team in the nation. And so I said, well, okay. So by year two, I expanded from 2 to 10 basketball teams, and boys and girls, youth, AAU. And so that's when I was like, you know what, this is all right. And I will say I was fully okay with it when my top player, standing at 6'3", 220 in the 10th grade, was invited to Nike. And the Nike camp that I missed because I was pregnant as a young student athlete, she was afforded the opportunity to be invited, and I accompanied her there. And to see all of the coaches that recruited me on the baseline, and when I walked into my Jordan outfit, and they were like, that is Angela Davidson. Oh my gosh, who did she bring here? And to see this kid do what she did against one of the top seniors in the country, I knew that it was okay. And I was okay with coaching and being where I was at.
Wait, we skipped something here. You got pregnant when you're playing in college?
In high school. I don't tell people that people kind of do the math, but I was going into my senior year. Yeah.
Okay. So you're in what, Metairie, right? You're in Louisiana.
Yeah. Okay. Leesville.
Oh, you're in where?
Leesville, Louisiana.
Okay. You're in Leesville, Louisiana.
Yeah.
And you're a high school basketball star.
Yeah.
Had you committed to Ole Miss at this point or not yet?
No, I had not. So about 50 of the top 150 dropped off, and 50 that were still there. And then when I narrowed down my list to top 25, they were still there.
Okay. So but this was before that. Okay. So when did you actually find out you were pregnant?
Going into my junior year.
Your junior, are you playing at the time? Is it winter?
Yeah.
Is it? Yeah. So winter, you find out you're pregnant.
I delivered him September 1st. So you figure.
Hold on. But again, don't skip, because this part, like, first, this is so far out of, I know there's plenty, I have friends, there's guys that had a kid when they were in high school or in college, but not actually the woman who's the hooper. Okay, so you're playing.
Yeah.
How long did you know you're pregnant before you told anybody?
I was 3 months before I
you
told
what, three
my
months?
3 months, and I told my high school coach. I didn't even tell my mom. I told my coach.
What was that conversation like?
I went in the office and I said, I have something to tell you and you're not going to be proud of me. And I started to cry. He already knew. And he said, you're pregnant. And I said, yeah. And I can't tell my mom. My mom, at the time, was a fiery Jew, and she like drove all over the world for me in basketball. And so I knew she was going to kill me. I just knew she was going to kill me. And she didn't kill me, clearly, but I went through a lot. You know, once mom knew, it was, you know, it was really tough, like really tough. Like in that culture, you do not embarrass the family. And what I did was like the whole total embarrassment of embarrassment. And so that is why I did not get, that's why I was a high school All-American nominee. And that's why I was not named an All-American. And it was why I missed the opportunity to accomplish that All-American status.
So that summer before your senior year, you're pregnant, you deliver your child in September.
He was 9 pounds. I was overweight. And clearly I was 18 years old, 17, turning 18 within 6 days. We are, you know, my birthday's the 7th. So, I had joint issues. I literally was averaging nothing until January, February of when conference play comes in, district play. And when I tell you, because of the scope of my life, the landscape of my life changed drastically. Mm-hmm. I ended up averaging a triple double my senior year, which is, I know, is unheard of, but I grew up
with blocks though, right? Wasn't with blocks, it was rebounds and assists, or was it with blocks?
Oh, points. So I averaged 22 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists, 5 block shots, and 3 steals.
And you had a kid at home. So how do you balance that? How do you do that? Like you're 18 and you're playing, and you're in high school and you have a kid.
I was terrible. I was a terrible mother. Within 6 months, I was like, I want to be a kid. Oh, no. But if it was not for my mother, I wouldn't be where I am today. She, you know, mom was adopted at birth. So she was very embracing when he came at first. The decision was, do we keep him or not? Mm-hmm. It was that. And, you know, I was really frustrated. I had lots of tears. I tried to do the mom thing and it was like, I am horrible. But the best thing I could do, what mom put me in position to do, was to go to college, get my education, and come back and take care of him. And that's what I did.
So she took care of him while you were in college?
So she took care of him the first 2 years. And then when I started dating my first husband, his family took him so I could finish playing.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't tell this story because I want young women to know that I don't glorify it by any means. It's a very difficult thing to bounce back from. But we are human and we are women in the game. And when I played back then, coaches would eat your alive if they found out that was you didn't even keep scholarships back then.
If you found out you're pregnant.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a wow from Angela. I really appreciate her joining me. We'll get to part two upcoming. Reminder, the Doug Gottlieb Show is available daily, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on your iHeartRadio app, foxsportsradio.com, or SiriusXM 217 203. In the meantime, stay tuned for part two. Angela was fantastic. The tale gets even better. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball.
Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Who will be selected number one? Which teams will trade up and down? And who will be crowned Mr. Irrelevant? It's time for the 2024 NFL Draft. And iHeart is your home for the NFL Podcast Network. Get all the insights, mock drafts, and trade rumors with podcasts like Around the NFL and Move the Sticks. Open the free iHeart app and search NFL Draft for dozens of podcasts, playlists, and live stations to get you ready for the weekend's big event.
Let's go!
Listen to NFL podcasts on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search NFL to start listening.
Hey, it's Andy, Mike, and Jason of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast, and we're inviting you to join us live on NFL Plus following the first round of the NFL Draft.
That's right. We will be live with in-the-moment fantasy football reactions to all the first-round selections and surprises.
Lots of elite talent at the skill positions that will have a big impact on fantasy football this year.
The Fantasy Footballers Draft Special will air exclusively on NFL Plus on Thursday, April 25th, following the conclusion of the first round of the draft. Go to plus.nfl.com to sign up today. Terms and conditions apply.
NFL Total Access, the podcast, is getting you ready for the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Andrew Levy, and I'll be delivering two shows a week to make sure you're caught up on the very latest NFL news, including every free agency move and how it changes the draft needs of your favorite team. Draft experts and talent scouts, mock drafts, and a few shock drafts, too. NFL Total Access, the podcast, is already on the clock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.